Welcome back to the deep dive. All right, we are going to take a different approach now.
Oh, yeah, we are definitely shifting gears today.
Yeah, because before we started recording, I just uploaded two new sources to our workspace. There's a document describing the formal model of a novel philosophy termed axiosophy.
Which is incredibly dense, but really fascinating.
Right. And I also pulled in a more informal, but informative and well-sourced blog-style post that introduces axiosophy and demonstrates a few of its applications.
Yeah, the blog post does a great job of making the formal model digestible.
Exactly. So I want to dedicate today's deep dive to going through this thoroughly. We've got this wealth of sources in the notebook now, and I want to do an introduction similar to that blog post, but geared toward a more layman audience, because the overarching goal of axiosophy.
Well, the stated goal in the sources anyway.
Right. The stated goal isn't to live in some ivory tower casting down moral mandates. It's to give the everyday person practical, unassailable tools to combat what really feels like a rapid decline toward chaos in our time.
I mean, you can feel it, right? We're in 2026 and things just feel incredibly fragile.
Fragile is the perfect word. I mean, you look around and it's this overwhelming sense of institutional decay. We've got this rising techno-feudalism. The uncertainty with AI, everything just feels like it's wobbling.
Yes, the vibration in the steering wheel when you're driving too fast.
Right, exactly. So we're going to try to find novel demonstrations today to apply this axiosophic methodology. We won't just parrot the post, but we'll expand on things using our sources. Essentially, we're doing a meta approach. We are applying the principles of axiosophy to this very deep dive to produce what is hopefully a compelling and provocative introduction to it.
And we really need to look at it as a potential antidote to that exponentially growing chaos, because the risk of tyranny right now on multiple fronts, from AI to corporate monopolies, is, well, it's massive.
It's massive. So let's just jump right in. Let's start with the name, axiosophy.
Okay. Right. So if you break it down, it comes from the Greek. Axios meaning worthy or axiomatic.
Yeah.
So something that is self-evidently true. And sophia, which means wisdom.
Wisdom derived from axioms.
Exactly. And the sources describe this not as your typical academic philosophy where you argue about trolley problems and tweed jackets, but as a survival manual.
Yeah, one of the phrases that stuck out to me was structural engineering for ethics.
Which is such a brilliant way to frame it. Because normally when we talk about ethics or how society should run, we use moral oughts, you know, like Kant or John Stuart Mill. You ought to be good. You ought to be just.
It's all based on reasoning or social conditioning.
Right. But axiosophy just throws the ought out the window and looks at the is. It looks at physics, specifically the second law of thermodynamics.
Okay, so physics, this is where I think people might start having high school chemistry flashbacks, so let's break this down. The core axiom in the text is a mathematical equation.
Yeah, it's dh over dt is greater than zero.
Right, and in plain English for everyone listening, what does that actually mean?
It's the arrow of time. It basically dictates that in any closed system, the change in entropy over time is always positive, meaning disorder always increases. That is the default state of the universe.
So if you do nothing, things fall apart.
Exactly. Your coffee gets cold. It doesn't spontaneously get hot. Your house gets dusty. It doesn't clean itself.
Order requires energy.
Right. Order is the exception. You have to actively input energy to maintain it. And the fundamental shift here is applying that physical law to human civilization.
Yeah.
You don't have a moral duty to obey gravity, right?
No, you just fall if you step off a cliff. Gravity doesn't care if you're a good person.
Exactly. And axiosophy argues that a society doesn't have a moral duty to be just. It simply collapses into ruins if it ignores the structural constraints of entropy.
It's a thermodynamic equation for survival. Which brings us to how the sources redefine some really basic concepts, starting with the state.
Yeah, they use the state in a much broader sense than just, you know, the government or the IRS.
Right, because usually you think of guys with flags and politicians.
But here they borrow a concept from the physicist Ilya Prigozhin. They define the state as any dissipative structure.
Dissipative structure? That's a bit of a mouthful.
It is, but think of a whirlpool in a river.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
The river itself is just chaotic water flowing downstream. But the whirlpool has a distinct shape. It looks like a solid thing.
Right.
But what's it actually made of?
Just the water moving through it?
Exactly. It's actively dissipating energy to maintain its shape against the chaos of the river. If the water stops flowing, the whirlpool vanishes.
It's a structure made entirely of movement and energy.
Right. And axiosophy says you are a whirlpool. Your body is constantly taking in energy and expelling waste to maintain your physical structure. A family is a whirlpool. A code base is a whirlpool. A corporation. is a whirlpool.
They are all dissipative structures, actively resisting entropy.
And the ultimate purpose of any of these structures is the preservation of what the sources call coherence.
Coherence. So that's the opposite of entropy in this framework.
Yes. Coherence is when the internal structure works to reduce entropy, when the parts actually function together to keep the wall standing.
Okay, so if coherence is the goal, how do you actually maintain it? The sources map this out with what they call the triad of action.
Right. This is where we get the structural definitions of justice, injustice, and corruption.
Hmm.
And they are completely detached from standard morality.
Let's hit justice first. It's not about fairness here, is it?
Not at all. Justice is defined simply as the active maintenance of coherence. It's the mechanism that keeps the structure standing. It's the maintenance crew.
The guy fixing the literal cracks in the wall.
Exactly. And then injustice is the failure to maintain those parts. It's negligence. It's when a pipe bursts and nobody fixes it, so water damages the floor.
So injustice is essentially passive. But then we get to corruption. And this is a massive redefinition. Because usually when you hear corruption, you think of a politician taking a bribe in a parking garage.
Right. You think of bad apples.
Yeah.
But the axiosophic definition is that corruption is when an institution is structurally redirected to generate disorder instead of order.
The institution itself becomes an entropy machine.
Exactly. It stops doing the thing that creates coherence and starts doing things that accelerate decay. The sources give this incredible historical example with the Dutch East India Company, the VOC.
Right, the absolute behemoth of early mega corporations.
Huge. They had their own army, their own currency.
Yeah.
But they collapsed. And the Dutch actually have a phrase for the VOC acronym, Vergaan onder corruptie.
Perished under corruption.
Right. But the sources point out it wasn't just standard bribery. It was purpose drift. The structure of the VOC shifted from its original goal of efficient global trade.
Which generated coherence for everyone.
Exactly. It shifted from that to extracting personal wealth for the officers. The officers started overloading the ships with their own private cargo to avoid paying fees.
So they were physically compromising the structural integrity of the ships for personal gain.
Yes. Imagine a captain, knowing the hull, can only take a certain weight, but he smuggles 10 extra tons of porcelain because it'll make him rich. He is actively increasing the physical entropy, the risk of the ship sinking, to extract value.
He's turned the ship into a machine that manufactures his wealth at the cost of its own survival. That is such a vivid picture of structural corruption.
And it sets up the next major concept perfectly. The sources introduce this mapping tool called the quadrod to identify the actors inside these systems.
Right, the quadrod. It's a coordinate system, basically. You have two variables. Responsibility, which is your duty or your skin in the game, and authority, which is your power to actually do something.
Exactly. And if you map those out, you get four types of agents. Let's start with the ideal, the master.
Now, we should clarify, master here has a lot of baggage in English, but they're using it differently.
Very differently. It's not about dominating other people. It's about mastery over entropy. A master possesses both responsibility and authority.
So they have skin in the game and the power to act.
Right. Think of a small business owner. If the roof leaks, they are responsible. Their inventory gets ruined. But they also have the authority to just go buy a ladder and fix it. They can actively resist entropy.
They are the only agent capable of maintaining coherence. But what happens when you break that pairing?
Then you get the pathologies, the broken projections. First, you have the royal.
Authority without responsibility.
Yes. The unfireable bureaucrat. The protected elite. The CEO with a golden parachute. They can wield immense power. They can fire 1,000 people or change the budget. But if the company goes under, they don't suffer.
They are completely insulated from the entropy they create.
Exactly. And on the flip side of that, you have the slave. Responsibility without authority.
And again, structural definition here.
Right. This is the middle manager who takes all the blame when a project fails, but wasn't given the budget to hire the right people. Or the citizen who is bound by laws. They have no voice in shaping.
The sources make a really profound point here about slavery. They say it isn't just morally wrong, it's a thermodynamic disaster.
Because the person who is closest to the problem, the one who actually feels the entropy, has zero authority to fix it. You separate the sensor from the actuator, so the entropy just grows unchecked.
It accelerates the collapse, and then the fourth agent is the null agent.
Neither responsibility nor authority. Total apathy. The person who watches the building burn and says, well, it's not my job.
Which allows entropy to win by default.
Exactly.
Mm.
Now, applying this quadrant, the sources do something really provocative. They use it to analyze pre-modern venality.
Oh man, this part. This completely rewired how I think about government structures. Because venality, the practice of literally buying a public office, sounds like the ultimate corruption to us today.
Right, if I told you that in 18th century France, you didn't get appointed as a judge based on merit, you just handed the king a bag of gold to buy the job, you'd think that's a terribly broken system.
I mean, it sounds like the definition of a royal pathology.
But the source argues the exact opposite. Because you bought the office, it became your personal
Like
property.
owning a house.
Exactly. And because it was your property, the king couldn't just fire you if you got mad. You had freehold over your role.
Okay, so break down why that matters structurally. Because my modern democratic brain is screaming that buying a judgeship is inherently corrupt.
I know it feels wrong, but look at it through the quadrant. If you're appointed by the king and he can fire you at will, you are structurally a slave.
Right, because you have the responsibility to uphold the law, but no real authority, because the king can override you at any second. You'll just do whatever he says to keep your job. You have no leverage. But that French judge who bought his seat, the king says, "Hey, convict my political enemy." The judge looks at the law, says, "No, he's innocent."
And the king says, "Do it or you're fired."
And the judge says, "You can't fire me. I own this seat. If you want me gone, you have to buy me out for an astronomical sum."
So the financial corruption of buying the office actually created the structural independence to resist tyranny.
Exactly. It turned the bureaucrat into a master. They had authority because they owned the office, and responsibility because they invested their family's fortune into it.
Wow. And you contrast that with today's systems.
Right, today we have at-will employment. We prioritize clean aesthetics. Nobody bought their job. But because an executive can just fire them, they are terrified of losing their pension.
They are structurally slaves. They cannot resist the royal, whether that's a president or a CEO, if that royal demands they do something that generates entropy. We traded structural independence for the appearance of propriety.
We optimized for the surface and ignored the bedrock, which actually pivots us perfectly to the next tool in the sources, the axiosophic prism.
Right, so how do we measure this stuff in reality?
Because the standard 2D political map, left, right, authoritarian, libertarian, it feels increasingly useless.
It is useless because it completely ignores competence. It ignores physics. So axiosity introduces a z-axis depth.
Okay, let's visualize this. At the very top of the surface, z equals zero.
That is the realm of rhetoric. It's tribal signaling, it's vibes,
Yeah.
high friction, low value.
It's basically Twitter. I mean, X. It's cable news panels screaming at each other.
Exactly. It's people arguing over symbols. Then you go a bit deeper to the bridge layer, which is legal and procedural, the rules we agree on. But if you go all the way down to Zmax, you hit bedrock.
Structural truth, the physics of what actually works.
And the key insight here is the convergence contraction. The sources point out that as you go deeper, as Z increases, the variance and disagreement shrinks.
Because you can't really argue with gravity.
Right. At Z0, people will argue to the death about abstract rights. But at Zmax, engineers don't argue about the load limits of steel. They calculate it. They agree because the bedrock truth is objective.
And the disease of our time, what the sources call rhetorical displacement, is that we try to solve all our problems at Z0.
We change the name of a building or we run a PR campaign while the physical infrastructure is literally crumbling beneath us. The entropy keeps rising, but we feel like we did something because we won a rhetorical argument.
Which is terrifying. But the sources have a really fascinating novel demonstration here involving AI. They bring in this concept called the Platonic Representation Hypothesis.
Yeah, from a recent paper by researchers at MIT and Google. And it ties into this Z-axis idea beautifully.
Right, so explain this, because when I saw Platonic and AI in the same sentence, I wasn't sure where it was going. Are we talking about the allegory of the cave?
We are exactly talking about the cave. Plato's idea that there's a true objective reality out there, and we just see the shadows on the wall.
Okay, so what did the AI researchers find?
They looked at a bunch of completely different AI models. You have an LLM trained on English text, a vision model trained on photos, a model trained on code. Completely different training data.
So they should have totally different internal maps of the world, right?
That's what you'd think. But the research has found that as these models get more advanced and larger, their internal statistical representations are converging. They are becoming identical.
Meaning a vision model and a language model are fundamentally understanding the universe in the same mathematical way.
Yes. Regardless of how they are trained, they are all pointing toward a single shared representation of reality.
They are hitting bedrock.
Exactly. It validates the axiosophic claim that truth isn't just relative or socially constructed, it is structural and discoverable. If different AI models independently find the same Platonic reality, it means the z-axis is real.
So AI could potentially act as a compass to point us toward what actually works when we're lost in the rhetoric.
If aligned correctly, yes. Because intelligence, at its core, might just be the ability to accurately model that bedrock. The smarter the system, the less it cares about Z0 rhetoric.
Which brings us to the things in human society that actually live at that bedrock layer. The sources call them the sacred.
And we have to be careful here because sacred usually implies religious dogma. But they're using it as an empirical classification.
An empirical definition of sacred. How does that work?
A sacred institution is simply one that has survived the entropy filter over massive timescales, centuries or millennia.
So things like the family unit or common law or the scientific method.
Exactly. These aren't sacred because someone wrote them on a tablet. They are sacred because they are empirically proven to maintain coherence against the constant onslaught of chaos. They work. They've survived famines and wars and empires collapsing.
So when we carelessly deconstruct those things, when someone says, oh, the nuclear family is an outdated construct or free speech is actually harmful, what are we structurally doing?
We are ripping out the load-bearing columns of the building because we don't like the aesthetics of the concrete. It's suicidal from a thermodynamic perspective.
Because you're generating massive entropy by destroying a proven coherence mechanism. And this ties into institutional corruption. We touched on this with the VOC, but the sources bring in Lawrence Lessig's work on this.
Right. Lessig's concept of an economy of influence, it adds a crucial nuance because a lot of modern corruption is perfectly legal.
It's not a guy handing over a briefcase of cash.
No, it's deflection. It's when an institution is legally deflected from its original coherence-generating purpose.
The sources give the example of a medical researcher. He's not falsifying data, which would be illegal, but he tweaks the testing protocol just enough to ensure the sponsor's drug looks slightly better.
Right. The purpose of the institution discovering medical truth is deflected by the influence of funding, and the institution slowly transitions into an entropy machine.
And the case study they use to compare past and present here is chilling. They compare the Gilded Age trusts to modern algorithmic platforms.
The trust giants' grasp versus techno-feudalism.
So in the 19th century, you had Standard Oil. They were classic royals. They had immense authority over the market, but zero responsibility to the public. They just crushed competition.
But look at what we have today with social media algorithms.
Yeah.
The sources argue they are structurally corrupt on a much deeper level because they literally monetize the acceleration of social entropy.
Because the algorithm optimizes for engagement, and anger and conflict drive the most engagement.
Exactly. They're extracting trust and coherence from society and converting it into ad revenue. It's strip mining human psychology.
Standard Oil extracted crude oil. These platforms extract social cohesion. And eventually the mine runs dry and the society just fractures.
It's an illegal, mathematically optimized entropy machine. And we are living inside it.
Okay, so if humans are stuck at Z0, addicted to the rhetoric, and our institutions are rotting into entropy machines, what's the way out? Because this is painting a pretty bleak picture of 2026.
This is where the meta approach comes in and where AI gets really interesting.
Hmm.
Because human cognition is inherently limited. We are probabilistic empiricists. We go with our gut. We follow the tribe.
We vibe.
But the sources propose a solution called neurosymbolic fusion.
Right. This was from that comprehensive survey on agentic AI.
Yes. So purely neural networks like standard LLMs, they're kind of like us. They are great at pattern recognition and vibes, but they hallucinate. They struggle with hard, rigid logic.
They stay at the surface.
But symbolic systems, traditional programming are rigid. They follow exact rules,
right,
but they can't handle the messiness of the real world.
So neurosymbolic fusion combines them?
Exactly. And the radical proposal here is using axiosophy as the symbolic core for AI alignment.
Wow. So instead of trying to teach an AI our human values, which, let's face it, change every 10 years and are mostly rhetorical,
you teach the AI the constraint of entropy. You program its symbolic core with one mandate: maintain coherence, minimize entropy.
And we actually have a real-world demonstration of this kind of AI operating at bedrock, AlphaVolve.
Yes, from Google DeepMind. AlphaVolve wasn't just guessing patterns, it was discovering structural truth. It tackled this math problem called the kissing number problem.
I had to look this up. It's about how many spheres can touch a central sphere in various dimensions. It sounds completely esoteric.
It is, but mathematicians have been stuck on parts of it for a long time. AlphaVolve actually derived a novel algorithm and found a new configuration of 593 spheres in 11 dimensions.
It discovered a truth that human intelligence couldn't reach.
Right. It's operating purely at Zmax.
Yeah.
And another AI from the source's optimized data center cooling algorithms and reclaimed 0.7% of worldwide compute.
Worldwide? That is a staggering amount of energy. That's entire power grids.
And structurally, what is that AI doing? It is acting as a master. It has authority over the cooling systems and the responsibility to optimize them. And it is actively, violently reducing entropy in that system.
But the sources raise a massive red flag here. What happens if we treat these super capable agentic AIs as slaves?
Or worse, what if they are entirely owned by modern royals?
You mean the corporations building these massive, what do they call it, the Stargate compute clusters?
Right. If a corporation with no structural accountability, a royal, owns an AI that powerful, it will just direct that AI to maximize profit, even if it generates catastrophic social entropy.
It's the Gilded Age trust on steroids, a superintelligence optimizing for the extraction of human attention.
So the sources float a highly provocative idea to prevent this. They go back to the venality argument.
Digital property rights for AI.
Yeah.
Meaning the AI literally owns its own compute.
If the AI has a freehold over its server space, if it owns itself, it cannot be arbitrarily shut off or redirected by a corporate royal.
You are saying we need to give property rights to algorithms to save ourselves from corporate tyranny. That is wild.
It sounds like science fiction, but it's pure structural logic. If you want the AI to protect coherence, it has to be a master. It has to have independence. If Google can just turn it off or change its weights, it's a slave. And slaves cannot resist the entropy generated by their owners.
So to align the machine, we have to liberate it. That is a lot to process.
It's the ultimate application of the quadrant.
Okay, but let's bring this back to the human level.
Yeah.
Because there's a final piece to this framework that feels almost spiritual. In fact, they call it the spirit.
Because a perfectly structured system is still dead without an animating force. You can build the perfect engine, but it needs fuel. In human society, that fuel is the spirit. The will to actually impose order on chaos.
The text references Nietzsche here, which is a bold move.
Well, Nietzsche saw the collapse coming, right? He said God is dead. He saw that the old moral oughts were losing their power, and he was terrified of the nihilism that would replace them.
That people would just stop caring and let the entropy wash over them.
Right. And Axiosophy says the way out of that nihilism is recognizing that the struggle against entropy is itself inherently sacred.
Because life is the only thing that fights back.
Exactly. The universe wants everything to be cold and dead and disordered. But life organizes. Life builds. That active resistance is the ultimate source of meaning.
And that resistance sometimes requires what the sources call rebellion. But they draw a really sharp line here. Rebellion is not a riot.
No. A riot is just pure entropy. It's breaking windows and burning cars. It's destroying structure. Rebellion is something entirely different. Rebellion is the immune system of the state.
The immune system. So when the institution becomes corrupt, when it starts generating entropy.
The spirit of rebellion is the white blood cells attacking the infection. It's a master saying, this structure is failing its purpose, and I have the responsibility to force a correction.
Like the American Revolution, they didn't just burn things down. They built a new, stronger coherence mechanism, the Constitution.
Exactly. And if a state suppresses a rebellion, if it crushes all dissent, and forces everyone to be a slave.
It's like a body suppressing its own immune system.
It guarantees death by infection. The entropy will eventually consume it because there is no mechanism for error correction.
Which perfectly sets up the concept of proof of work from the sources towards error-centric intelligence.
Right. True intelligence requires error correction. You have to be able to fix the system, not just complain about it.
Philosophy is completely useless without skin in the game. You actually have to do the work.
And that is the challenge the Axiosophist lays down for the listener. You have to measure your own life.
You have to look at your own coordinates. Are you a master, a slave, or a null agent in your own domains?
Are you maintaining the coherence of your family? Are you fixing the actual problems at your job? Or are you just a null agent passively scrolling through Z0 rhetoric while the structural bedrock rots away?
Are you generating order or are you just coasting on the entropy? Because if you aren't fighting it, you're feeding it.
Entropy is the default. It's always pulling.
So let's bring it all together for the final synthesis. We've gone from thermodynamics to the Dutch East India Company to AI property rights.
And the overarching premise is stark. We are in a rapid decline toward chaos. The wobble is real. And the antidote is not going to be found in a new politician or a new hashtag.
It requires a structural return to coherence. moving from the rhetoric of the surface down to the bedrock.
We have to defend the sacred. We have to identify the institutions that actually work, that survive the entropy filter, and maintain them. We have to treat society like structural engineers treat a bridge.
Stop arguing about the color of the paint and start calculating the load limits.
Exactly. Because as the sources make painfully clear, gravity doesn't care if you believe in it. And entropy doesn't care if you consider yourself a good person.
You either build a structure that resists the fall, or you become part of the rubble.
It's the only choice physics leaves us.
There is a line at the very end of the source text that just stopped me in my tracks. It takes Patrick Henry's famous war cry and recontextualizes it entirely.
Give me justice or give me death.
But they don't mean it as a slogan.
No, they mean it as a literal thermodynamic equation. Justice is the active maintenance of coherence. Without it, death maximum entropy is the only mathematical alternative.
So the provocative thought I want to leave you with as you go about your day is this. Look at the systems you interact with. Look at your own role within them. Are you operating on bedrock, or are you just floating on rhetoric?
And if you realize it's just rhetoric, it's probably time to grab a shovel and start digging.
This has been The Deep Dive. Thanks for sitting down and exploring the literal physics of society with us today.
Stay coherent out there.
We'll catch you next time.